Thank you. The recordings have now been started.
Thanks.
Shall I do roll call, Michele?
Please.
We'll do that. On the call, we have Michele Nilon, Mikey O'Connor, Barbara Steele, Derry Cobb, Kevin Erdmann, Michael Collins, Eric Brown, Chris Chaplow, and Matt Serlin. And for staff, we have Marika Koenigs and David Giza and Glenda Tangerie, myself. Have I left off anybody? Thank you, Michele. Over to you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, good morning. I don't know, is anybody there in evening already? No, okay. You should all have got an email within the last 24 hours from Marika with the agenda for today's wonderfully exciting meeting. So we've had our roll call. It wasn't that great. And now we're going to get an update from the ICANN compliance team, I hope. I believe that would be you, David.
It would be. It would be.
So okay, do you mind if I hand over to you?
Not at all. I'd like to say good evening, good afternoon, good morning to everybody. And what I'm going to do this morning is just provide a sort of a 90,000-foot view of IRTP compliance from ICANN's perspective. And I think many of you know that on ICANN's website we have a dashboard, and on that dashboard we have a link to contractual compliance. And when you click on that link, it will take you to our consumer complaint statistics dashboard. And on that dashboard, you would notice that if for the first 10 months of this calendar year, ICANN received approximately 2,000 transfer-related complaints from consumers. And if you do the math, that comes out to roughly about 50 transfer complaints a week. And so as our compliance team was preparing for today's meeting, I asked my colleagues, number one, how much time would be required to actually do a much more detailed analysis of those 2,000 complaints, approximately 50 a week, and in particular, what percentage of those complaints pertain to essentially the top five working group charter questions. And so what my team told me was that it would take approximately 4 weeks for us to do that analysis, given the current manual state of work that's required to actually go into the database and actually examine those complaints on an individual basis in order to determine if the consumer has in fact properly described the nature of the complaint. And so I asked my team to get started on that work, and by the early part of January, I'll actually have some statistical data that I can share with you that'll be much more precise than the information I'm going to give you this morning. But as our team looked at that data and did kind of a sort of rough rule of thumb analysis, we found that there are essentially six reasons why consumers have challenges with the IRTP, and we do think that the largest or most significant reason, quite frankly, is that registrants just don't have the proper understanding or awareness concerning valid grounds for denying transfer requests. We truly believe there's an information and education gap. We're not completely certain how to best address that in the policy, but we do think that the working group should consider some training and education options that perhaps ICANN or others could put forth in the marketplace as a way to help educate and inform registrants regarding the grounds for denying transfer requests. The second area that we think is essentially in play is wrongful denial of transfer. Or in ICANN speak, it's called wrongful knacking. And we think that happens, quite often, but again, without doing the manual analysis on the complaints, I can't tell you specifically the statistical incidence of occurrence.
All right, Dave, just one question, mm-hmm. just to cut across here, just being a nasty, horrible chair and just abusing my powers. with respect, okay, the understanding one I've no issue with. With respect to wrongful denial, are you sure that from what you've seen so far that these are actually cases of wrongful denial, or do you think that they're more likely to still be part of the misunderstanding? I mean, do you have enough information to feel confident that, yes, it is a breach of the actual policy?
After we complete the analysis, I can give you the specific answer, but right now my gut tells me it's a combination of both. I think unfortunately consumers have difficulty reading if they do read the inter-registrar transfer policy, and then presuming they can read and understand it, I don't believe that they actually fully comprehend how it's applied by registrars in the transfer process. So I do think that some of the wrongful denial of transfer complaints are in fact just, you know, again, a lack of registrant understanding around valid grounds for denying transfer requests. And now there are other instances such as failure to provide the FOA and actually have any authorization, you know, code that occurs, but again, we don't have the actual number surrounding the statistical occurrence. And then we know that there are clearly failure to unlock domain issues. There's the infamous 60-day lock situation most often complained about is how it's applied or interpreted by GoDaddy. And then finally, there are reseller issues, and we think there are a variety of reseller-related challenges. But we actually need to drill down through the consumer complaint data in an attempt to separate and identify the, you know, perhaps the top three reseller-related transfer request issues so that we could then bring that information forward to the working group. And so our goal at this point is to use essentially the next 4 weeks to complete our look back on the 10 months of data for calendar year 2009, and then provide a high-level executive summary to the working group in early January. And I think what we'll most likely find is that as that data comes forward, I think some of the charter questions are clearly going to emerge as as mission critical going forward. Most clearly, I think, will be probably charter question C, whether special provisions are needed for a change of registrant when it occurs near the time of a change of registrar. I think that we've seen already from the way in which GoDaddy's policy has been interpreted or misinterpreted that there clearly needs to be some special provisions in the policy going forward to describe the difference between a change of registrant versus a change of who is information pertaining to the same registrant. I think we're also going to find that the policy could be improved with respect to item D, which would be standards or best practices implemented regarding the use of a registrar lock status. Here I think, you know, information and education and training would be useful, but I think quite frankly just some clear language in the policy written in plain English, quite frankly, I think would help registrants understand how a lock is applied, when it can be or cannot be applied, and ultimately what the impact of that application is on the registrant. And then I think that really takes us then to the charter question E, which would be how to best clarify, the policy denial reason number 7, which I think for quite some time has been a difficult reason for registrants to understand. And we think once we get some statistical data around this, we'll be able to help explain, you know, essentially how a domain name was already in lock status, and provided that, you know, the registrar provides this, you know, readily accessible and reasonable means for a registrant to remove the lock status, somehow if we can translate that into English for registrants, we think that that'll help clarify essentially the purpose of that specific transfer request denial, so that hopefully it'll begin to, you know, shed some light on the areas of the policy that are just clearly, clearly not understood by registrants. And I think that that's what we've seen from the data that we've looked at so far, is that the policy, unfortunately, was written by lawyers perhaps four lawyers. It is written, in very specific terms that are difficult for, an average registrant to read through and understand, and therefore we think it's difficult for a registrant to apply it, let alone file a complaint about it, when the registrant clearly hasn't had enough information, education, or training on the policy. And so we're hopeful that that the working group will recommend some sort of automated online information, education, or training approach to the IRTP, so that essentially in the future, a registrant could log on to perhaps ICANN's website and go through a 30-minute, training module on the IRTP. And that might be a wonderful way for a registrant to begin to get the basics of how the policy works, how it should be applied, and ultimately, how a registrant can file a complaint in the event that a registrar is failing to comply with the policy. And so, in a nutshell, that's about a 10-minute update on where contractual compliance stands at the moment, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Okay, anybody have questions? Thank you, David, by the way, for your overview.
You're welcome.
Okay, while waiting for other people to pull up their hands, just based on what you've seen so far with the data, and I know that you haven't done an in-depth analysis, are there a lot of complaints related to smaller registrars, or are they spread, or are they seem to be related to very big registrars? I mean, is there any ideas that you can say on that? I mean, because the reason I'm asking is if ICANN compliance is already cracking down on non-compliant registrars, and I see you sent three more termination notices yesterday.
We did.
I
could tell you that the early pattern that I've seen looking at the data is that the large registrars generally tend to get it right more often than not, and that's because they have sufficient staff and resources dedicated to administering the transfer process. The mid-sized to smaller registrars, unfortunately, don't have the same level of resources to facilitate the work that needs to be required. And so, we believe that there are instances where, mid to small size registrars just fail to follow through and complete all of the steps required to correctly, transfer a domain name. And we think that's in large part due to lack of administrative, capability, and/or resources to get perhaps the job done the way it's envisioned in the IRTP.
Okay, thank you. Michael Collins and then James Bladell.
David, I apologize if you said this earlier, but when might you expect this data, this analysis?
We'll have that information right after the first of the year, so I'm thinking it would be available in the second week of January at the very latest. And if there's a call before that, we'll certainly try to have the data in the first week of January.
James?
Hi, David. James Blatel from GoDaddy, and thanks for that update. And I have a quick question and then possibly a suggestion. The first question is, are you or is your team looking to compile historical data to measure not only how the situation is today, but also maybe how it has changed over the last 6 to 12 months? And the reason I ask that is because knowing that we are a lightning rod with some of our policies regarding transfers, we have made some changes to that over the previous year, and I would like to see if there's any measurable impact or improvement based on those changes and the outreach that we've done to help clear confusion on that. So I'm wondering if there's going to be any efforts to go back into retain data from earlier in 2009 and see if we can't measure any changes over the year.
Yeah, that's a great question, James. At the moment we've discussed that, but we haven't formalized that as part of our action plan. And I think many folks on the call know that contractual compliance is constructing an IRTP audit plan in our second trimester of ICANN's fiscal year. And so what that means is is by the time we get to Nairobi, you know, the contractual compliance team should have a draft IRTP audit plan that we are going to, you know, socialize with the community, you know, for purposes of determining, you know, how to best perform an audit around the key elements that contractual compliance believes ought to be, you know, further investigated, you know, and or enforced in the policy going forward. So, for example, at the moment, we think there are probably four key areas that we will be auditing. You know, the first area would be, you know, essentially the clear ability to lock or unlock domain names. A second area would be the lock status due to a whois change, because we know that that's a reoccurring issue or complaint. The third area we're anticipating auditing would be restrictions on transfers during the redemption grace period. And then finally, we think there's a large amount of confusion and or just inconsistent application around the requirements of the FOA. And so we think that that's a fourth area that's also ripe for audit. But again, we want to present that information to others who can help facilitate a more robust and comprehensive audit. And so we are going to be seeking some feedback from the registrar stakeholder group in this process. And I know that several members of the stakeholder group have already volunteered to look at that draft audit plan and provide some comments, so that when the plan is ready to be deployed next calendar year, which would most likely be in the summer of next calendar year, that we're in a strong position to actually perform a useful audit that'll provide both current data, and then, to your point, James, we'll do some sort of look back here, around that audit data, and tie that into the statistical analysis that we're doing right now on the calendar year 2009 transfer complaint information.
Okay, thank you, and. It would be interesting to see that historical data, especially for maybe the last 12 to 18 months. The second item I wanted to raise was more of a suggestion, which was something that we've encountered in some of the security working groups, and that is when compiling any sort of comparative analysis of rate of incidents per registrars and releasing that to the public, would strongly ask or encourage ICANN to express those rankings in terms of a ratio of either successful transfers, which is probably difficult to measure, or in terms of domains under management, so that rather than saying GoDaddy had X complaints and Black Knight had Y complaints, that you would express them as a ratio of complaints per domain under management. And I think that the any of the math majors on the call would probably realize why I'm concerned about that, is that, when you look at just the raw numbers, we come up at the very, very top of every one of those lists, but we don't think that that's necessarily telling the true story when it's viewed in the
context. Do you mind if I cut across here?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm just picking up on your point. I'd agree with you wholeheartedly, but also I think you'd have to put in a kind of a threshold somewhere as well, because you're going to appear as having a disproportionately high number of complaints, but that's as a percentage of the number of domains that you have, et cetera, et cetera. It makes sense. But then for a registrar with only, say, 1,000 or 2,000 domains, if they have 3 complaints, are you going to say that that's 3 times worse or 5 times worse than, the 300 complaints against GoDaddy? Not saying that there are 300 complaints against GoDaddy, but you know what I mean, as in terms proportionally.
Well, I think what we're hitting on here, McKelly, is the old lies, damn lies, and statistics. We can tell multiple stories with the same set of data, and it's just something that I would, and I think to McKelly's point, you may raise a valid concern as well, but certainly our concern is that if just raw numbers are presented, I would probably speculate that our level of incidence, just in terms of raw numbers, is higher than probably the next 3 or 4 registrars combined, because that's just the universe of names under management.
I would agree there. The next person who had a hand up there was Mikey.
Thanks, McKaylee. Mikey O'Connor here. David, I have a question for you that's more operational, and that is, and maybe a follow-up afterwards. But the question is, how automated is the process by which a person submits a complaint? And, you know, judging from your answer, it sounds like it's not terribly automated. And then I guess the follow-up is, do you have any plans to improve that, partly so that you won't have to spend 4 weeks analyzing the data in the future, but also because it seems like with some clever enhancements to that process, you could build the education process into the complaint filing process so that when a registrant is thinking about filing a complaint, they get help right when they're filing it, rather than the prospect of a half an hour in front of an interactive education screen, which doesn't show me much, and I imagine most registrants wouldn't sit still for it either. So it's kind of a blob of questions for you.
Sure. Sure. Well, first, we do have a consumer complaint ticketing system that is automated and accessible through ICANN's website. And that system does allow us to collect consumer complaint data by virtue of a form that is filled out online by the consumer. And the consumer uses a drop-down box to essentially describe the nature of the complaint. And then there's a dialog box that allows the consumer to describe with more specificity the actual nature of the complaint. That information goes into our system. And our system, unfortunately, is not a extremely robust, data warehouse that would allow us at the moment to run, multiple reports off of that data. And so that's why we have to perform a manual analysis of the data right now, because quite frankly, we don't have the software tool available or the programming available to run an automated report off the data. Given the way that the data is structured in the database. Now, we do have a plan to improve that, and that's one of the IT requests that the contractual compliance has put forward as part of our operational strategy for this year. And if that request is approved, we're hopeful that by the end of this fiscal year, which would be June of 2010, that we could see some improvements in the C-ticket system. However, if our request is not approved, then the C-ticket system, might not be, further enhanced or automated until the following fiscal year, which would start in July of 2010. And I do think that there is an opportunity to do more information and education through the C-ticket system. Quite frankly, we haven't done enough of that. And and perhaps as part of a further enhancement of that system, we could put some frequently asked questions. We could put some examples, quite honestly, of when registrars get it right, because there are many instances where registrars do get this right. And we tend to focus on the negative more often than we do on the positive. And I think we ought to focus on those positive instances where we're seeing compliance with the policy and use that, perhaps as a teachable moment that would help a registrant understand how the policy does work. And unfortunately, in those instances where the policy isn't followed to the letter, there I think we can help begin to tell that story again more effectively through different information education type tools. And so we're certainly going to use our contractual compliance newsletter, which will be issued 4 times a calendar year, as a way to tell this story. And so in the next edition of the newsletter, which will be released before Nairobi, you'll see a section of the newsletter now that's going to be dedicated to IRTP. That's going to be a standard section in the newsletter, and so each and every edition will have information pertaining to IRTP as a way to, again, further inform and educate the community.
This is Mike again. Just a thought, and that is that the description that you just gave is a description of a system that is primarily oriented towards your staff as its customer.
Correct.
And a suggestion for the designers of the new system would be that they orient the system so that the registrant filing the complaint is the customer of the system. Because I think that what a registrant could use would be almost a diagnostic series of questions where the registrant says, I can't get my domain. It's stuck. I don't know why. Well, is it one of these three things? Yes, it's this thing. Well, which of these things have happened? Well, these three things have happened, and so on and so forth. So that part of the process would be a registrant learning during the course of filing the complaint that, in fact, their situation is normal, and then the opportunities for further action at that point, but not necessarily filing a complaint, which would thin out the number of complaints that are in fact spurious and thus serve you as a customer. But at the same time, and more importantly from my standpoint as a registrant, make tools available at the time that it's needed to the registrant that has the problem. One of the problems with your approach of newsletters and training is that the typical registrant is never going to read that stuff. The only time that they're going to be interested in this is when the house is burning down, when they have an acute problem. And so to the extent that this design could be oriented a little bit more toward registrant as customer and less just a simple online form filling out, basically front end to what sounds like a fairly fragile database, I think that you would get a lot of kudos for that.
Yeah, it's a great suggestion, and I've made a note here to discuss it with our IT staff and determine, again, what would it take to, to enhance the existing system to do, essentially what you've suggested, and I'll be happy to, report back to the group after I get some feedback from our IT team.
I mean, David, just cutting across there. I mean, as registrars, we deal with complaints, queries, support stuff for thousands of clients on a day-to-day basis. So, I mean, if you talk to some of the registrars, I mean, you can free to talk to me, and I'm more than happy to talk to you about it. And I don't know about the other registrars; I can't speak for them. But we're used to dealing with large volumes of customer service issues. So, there's plenty of software out there. It sounds to me like if you have to go off to the IT department, I don't know them, and so hopefully they wouldn't be offended. It sounds like it's going to become a very complicated process for something that shouldn't be. I mean, there are plenty of support desk solutions out there. Some are open source, some are commercial, some don't cost you anything more than the hardware you shove them on. Others cost thousands and thousands of dollars, but there's plenty of things in between as well.
It's a great point. I would certainly prefer to find a commercial off the shelf solution that could be deployed quickly and effectively, at a very reasonable cost. And that's where I would seek the assistance from our IT staff in securing that type of software tool, as opposed to the make buy decision where we're actually taking our system and actually enhancing it through a variety of let's say rigorous programming changes, which can be both time consuming and costly. So I'm with you. I'd much rather use existing solutions that are available in the marketplace, so long as I can get the assistance from our IT team to evaluate them and then identify the most useful and cost-effective solution that would address not only the needs of registrants but would also help ICANN facilitate its compliance work.
This is Mikey again. I guess I just want to amplify something that Michaeli just said, which is, you have on, even just on this call, a couple of registrars that have an awful lot of experience in dealing with exactly the same kinds of customers and customers who have exactly the same kinds of issues. And so in addition to talking to your IT team, I'd just like to amplify Michaeli's point that you should bring some registrars into that conversation because they can tell you the solutions that work and the ones that don't, probably based on bitter experience.
Yeah, we will absolutely do that. In fact, even as we started planning for the audit, we reached out to some of the registrars on this call and others, and quite honestly, we will continue to do that. Particularly here, as we discuss, improvements or even just, complete outright change to our consumer complaint system. So we will definitely do that.
Can I just go back to the queue there? Marika had her hand up, and I had my own hand up. I'll let Marika go first. She's much better looking.
Yeah, this is Marika. I took my hand down because I thought I could take that offline as well with Dave, because one of the things I just wanted to comment from, from a policy perspective and from the policy team, we've been trying to advocate as well to have more data internally available, as we believe that will greatly help to inform policy discussions and decisions. And our hope would be that any new data gathering system or how to manage complaints and track those will not only be limited to the compliance team or complaints that are received through the online form, but it will also extend to, for example, phone calls that are received at the front desk or through the registrar or registry liaison teams, so we really can get an idea of where there are issues so that we can actually make informed decisions and focus efforts there where change is needed or required. So.
Okay. Mikey, is your hand back up again, or is that from
Paul? Yeah, it is. It's my third hand of the day. See how many hands I wind up with the rest of the call. I guess where this is headed for me is that perhaps one of the things that we want to include in the recommendations that we develop on this working group, Marika's comments really sort of spark this, which is this notion that one of our recommendations ought to point, rather than simply passively accepting David's comments about new systems, we might want to actually make a recommendation about those systems for, I'm not sure what the scope of that would be, but rather than just...
I don't think that's within the scope of this working group, to be perfectly honest.
Well, I think I think the way that it gets into the scope is that clearly one of the themes that's been evolving is education of registrants.
Well, no, I don't disagree with you that the community shouldn't be making recommendations, but I don't think it's within the scope of this particular working group for us to focus a lot of attention on this. I think it's something that maybe some of us should take up with David offline, if you don't mind.
I think I'm going to push back on that because I think that one of the opportunities here is if we have a recommendation about registrant education as it pertains to IRTP.
Okay, are you talking about registrant education or are you talking about the reporting system for complaints?
Oh, no, only to the extent that the education be delivered at the time of the complaint being filed.
Okay, that I don't have a problem with. I'm sorry, I just didn't want us to get into turn this working group into being a software analysis team.
No, I agree with that. But I think that to the extent that we can identify the notion that education delivered just in time is a good idea, and that then that does touch the system that gathers the complaints. Now, no, I agree we don't want to get into a software selection make by package open source or that's way outside our scope, but I think that we could recommend that whatever system are used to collect the complaints deliver education during that process so that the registrant, in the case where they're in error in making their complaint, can learn instead what they ought to do and who they ought to call to do that thing.
Okay, so are you looking for something whereby instead of having a simple form that the registrant has to go through a kind of a wizard which asks some questions about the complaint?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm not sure that that's, you know, again, we're getting into software design, but the...
No, we're talking about practical implementation of something.
Right. I mean, you know, certainly something like that's kind of appealing to me, because that way, if I'm a consumer, I learn that, oh, this really is a valid thing, this is a serious problem, or no, actually, that's normal, you shouldn't file a complaint, here's who you ought to take that up with, and here's the...
So you can direct them to a more suitable source during
the
process. Okay.
Maybe not specifically, but, you know, take it up with your gaining registrar, take it up with your losing registrar, you know, the sort of generic stuff, but deliver the education about this complicated process at the time that the person needs it, which is the time where they feel like they need to file a complaint. And I think that also ties into another one of the recommendations that at least I've been lobbying for. We'll see if it gets through the whole working group, which is a circuit breaker that says, you know, in the case of a non-responsive registrar or, you know, whatever, that there is some mechanism for the registrant to jump to a place that they can get help. And again, the information about that process being delivered at the time that they're filing a complaint, I think, is a useful thing.
Okay. David, would you like to chip in or... come back on that?
I would like to cut across on that if I have a moment here. Mikey, I understand what you're saying, and I see the value of providing that on-the-spot education or outreach, especially if it's targeted to an issue that is first and foremost in a registrant's mind. And you know, we have the opportunity to clear up some confusion. We should, you know, strike while we have a receptive audience. However, I see a danger to that, and the danger is this kind of slippery slope where ICANN becomes a pseudo-support or support escalation resource to, you know, to registrars and other service providers. So I think that's something that should be stayed away from, as well as I can see us debating for days, if not weeks, on how those documents, if they're structured, or how those scripts, if they're actually human beings answering the calls, would be designed so as to ensure that ICANN was not interjecting any degree of judgment into those incidents or leading the registrant to believe that certain methods were acceptable and certain methods were not acceptable or something like that. So I think that I get a little nervous when I think about all the potential downstream implications of what you're suggesting. Without, you know, that said, I do think that there is some value to it. I just think it might be something that would have to be very, very cautiously undertaken. And perhaps the best way is that upon receipt of a complaint or any type of a notification issue, you know, I'm sure there's some sort of a confirmation email that goes out from an automated system. Perhaps there can be some links to resources and further reading material contained in there. And that might be the safest way to ensure that we're providing that on-the-spot information without affecting the quality or the veracity of the incidents that we're trying to collect.
This is Mikey. Let me jump back in here, and then David, you can have a crack at this. I don't. That's part of the reason why, when Michele came up with the idea of a wizard, I sort of backed up. I'm not sure that I know what the right approach is, and James, I think yours might be a lot easier to implement and a lot easier to police. And I also agree that we don't really want ICANN to become the adjunct to registrar or registry support. But I think that the notion that we're edging towards in a lot of these conversations is education. And I think to the extent that we can deliver it at the point in time that it's needed, that's my main thrust here. David, do you want to take a crack at any of this?
Yeah, I'll just try to make my comments brief. I do think the working group should, you know, separate, you know, those recommendations that clearly result in changes to the IRTP as a policy document, and then those recommendations that, you know, flow from the policy that affect the operational requirements, let's say, of ICANN, you know, and or contractual compliance. Because I do think that we don't want to get down that slippery slope and find that we're in a place that, you know, ICANN can't fully support in the future without, you know, sufficient resources dedicated to that task. But I do believe that, you know, that information education is critical, and I do think, you know, clearly one thing that, you know, could be done is something as simple as just providing a plain English translation or version of the IRTP. There's already a working group that suggested that such a document ought to be constructed for the registrar accreditation agreement. This might be a perfect opportunity to do the same thing here with the IRTP, and then starting with that document, there may be ways to include that into an improved or enhanced redesign of the C-ticket system, or using some other software to, you know, to begin to crawl before we walk, and then, you know, walk before we run in this direction of informing and educating consumers, you know, more effectively than we do today. So if we just keep that in perspective, I think that will help make the compliance work that we do, you know, much more effective and meaningful for the community.
This is Mikey. One last thought. I think James has got a real good, real inexpensive, real quick suggestion that you all could probably implement right now, which is if you don't today, I've never filed a complaint, so I've never walked through the process, but if you don't include a link to the current policy and any plain English versions that come up in the response email, because presumably you do send a response email.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, that would be, I don't know, 5 to 10 minute change in the email template that you could do this afternoon. And I think that incremental changes that are easily done are always low-hanging fruit that you should go after wherever you can.
It's noted.
Okay, Anil George.
I think the emphasis on education is definitely useful. I'm presuming that's meant to be a suggestion that's sort of simultaneous with our efforts to hopefully avoid or address situations of hijacking. Because if you look at the ESSAC report, there were probably some registrants who, if they were educated, may still be in the same situation. So I just want to make sure that it's not a substitute for addressing something where education may not be able to resolve, you know, the malicious actors.
Well, with all due respect, I mean, if ICANN compliance staff is spending a lot of time chasing registrars around the countryside who aren't actually breaching anything, surely that's a waste of resources and is actually playing into the hands of people who are actually doing things that are malicious.
Yeah, I agree, but the ESSAC report seems to focus on people who are actually doing bad things, not people who are not guilty of things, right?
Yeah, but this is not a working group about the ESSAC report. This is a working group about the IRTP.
It's a working group about the IRTP that seems to have been spurred by the sort of things that were discussed in the ESSAC report. So I don't know that you can exclude that as a kind of a relevant document to our group.
I'm not excluding it. I'm merely stating that from my perspective, at least, and I don't know about anybody else's, anything where end users are better educated and have a better understanding of what rights and obligations they have and what rights and obligations registrars have will reduce the amount of spurious complaints being sent both to registrars, registries, ICANN, and everybody else. I'm not discounting for a moment anything about bad actors. I'm talking about the fact that if somebody knows for a fact that, you know, you cannot transfer a domain within the first 60 days of its registration, then that will immediately stop a certain number of complaints.
We're in agreement on that. I'm not discounting that in the way you're saying it, that education is helpful. All I'm saying is that it won't resolve all the problems here.
Okay. I'm going to leave my hand up there because I wanted us to ask David one question. David, you were talking earlier there about your compliance checks. One thing that you didn't seem to mention, and it's something which does concern me a small bit, is Whois servers? Are compliance actively checking that registrars have functioning Whois servers and that those Whois servers are actually putting out data that is usable?
The short answer is yes. We've deployed this calendar year a port 43 Whois accuracy audit tool or review that we use randomly to check servers, and we do have that data compiled, and that data is actually going to be released in the next version of the ICANN semi-annual contractual compliance report, which should be available in January. But I could certainly, you know, pull that data together and provide it to this group if the group would like to see it.
Well, I personally would, because because it's been a problem we've been having with some of our beloved colleagues in industry who have Whois servers on port 43, but they give back such little information you can't do anything with it.
Yeah, and as you pointed out, the results are all over the board in terms of some of your colleagues who seem to do it right, and others who, you know, I think for either just lack of understanding, lack of resources, or for some other reason, you know, choose not to comply with ICANN's requirements. And so we're collecting the audit information right now in an effort to determine, you know, what sort of action plan we should establish to correct the reoccurring problems that we've identified in the audit. But I'll have our lead auditor, William McElligott, compile the information ahead of the semiannual contractual compliance report release, and then I'll send it over to you.
This is Mikey. Could you, maybe Marika could facilitate this. Greg Aaron in the RAP working group is also very interested in precisely this data, and we started a little sub-team to start collecting it ourselves and then discovered that you were working on this. So could you pipe this conversation over to Greg to tie that one off?
Yes. I'll do, and I can liaise as well with William if he has that update, if he can also provide it then to the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group.
Terrific. Thanks a lot.
Okay, does anybody have any more questions for David? David, do you feel you've been well and truly grilled?
I do, and in about 50 minutes of time here, I think we have truly covered the waterfront and beyond, and that's good. It's the kind of dialogue that needs to take place, and again, I'm a permanent member of the working group, so I will be on all the calls going forward, and you know, we'll continue to provide this information to the working group, and you'll get the data from us in January, and then you can use that data to constructively address the five questions here in the charter.
Okay, thank you. Marika, I think we worked. How are we doing for time? We've still got about another few minutes, haven't we?
Yes, well, we have 8 minutes until top of the hour, and then it's a question whether people have time to continue for
okay.
a little bit more.
I think maybe we should actually put that to the people on the call, but let's try this a whole new thing for me, a bit of diplomacy. Lovely people on this call, would you like to take advantage of the extra half hour that we could use, or would you prefer that we wrap up on the hour?
Wrap up.
Okay, that's one wrap up. And
that's two wrap up.
Two wrap up. Okay, I'll rephrase the question. Does anybody want to extend beyond the hour? No, you all have lives. Okay. Okay, then. Constituency stakeholder group statements. As chair of this group, I would like to go on the record to say that I'm not particularly pleased about the lack of a statement from the ISP constituency. Even if they had given us a statement to say that they had no statement, I would be happy. I would accept that and go, okay, they don't care, or they don't have anything particular to say about it. I'm not happy about the fact that they haven't given anything at all. Marika?
Yes, just to note that we still have done item 3 as well. We were still reviewing as well the public comments.
I don't want to get into that in the last 7 minutes, Marika. I'm being a totalitarian here. I don't. If we start going into the comments, we'll hopefully all start talking about them. But we've got, according to my watch, we've got about 5 minutes. So I can't. I don't think it would be reasonable to start that. I just wanted to rant instead for a minute, if you'd let me.
Go ahead.
The business constituency. What happened with them? Did they give us something in the end, Marika?
Yes, they did, and those comments have already been integrated as well in the grid that has been circulated.
Okay. Which constituency groups haven't given us anything at all?
We haven't received anything, I think, from the NCUC and ISPs.
Okay. The IPs, the registrars, all those have. So basically, we have the non-commercial people who I would have thought had an interest in this, and the ISPs who should be able to at least tell us that they got the memo that there was a common period.
Would Glenn resend very stern reminders to them right now?
If you wouldn't mind. I mean, personally, I would be happier just for us to be able to say, okay, we consulted everybody, everybody was given ample opportunity to have input into this process, some people chose not to. Because I don't want the situation arising like has happened with some working groups where there is plenty of common periods and input and this and that, then you go to a public meeting in ICAM and somebody stands up and starts whinging and whining about a report and that person isn't an outsider, it isn't somebody who's never been to a meeting, it's not somebody who's popped up from nowhere, it's somebody who had plenty of time to do so but just chose not to. Does anybody have any problem with me taking that course of action? No. Okay. The next meeting, today is the 1st. We're heading towards Christmas. When are you people starting to break up for Christmas, or are you all workaholics?
Workaholics.
Workaholics. Okay.
Some of us are retired, and every day is a Saturday for us, so it's all the same.
You're retired and sitting back counting your money?
The latter part I'm not so sure about, but the first part is true.
Well, you can always say you delegate the responsibility of the counting to somebody else. Okay. Okay, fair enough, Barry. I like that. That's a good one. Okay, so we should have a meeting then. The last one before Christmas, I would suspect, would be the 19th. Is that okay for everybody, or do people envision that as being a problem?
What?
You mean the 15th?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Well, I never was any good at maths. Okay, the 15th. Okay. So the 15th, and then we wouldn't have another one, obviously, then until sometime in the new year. Is that okay with everybody?
Yep.
This, Marika, could we maybe already check when people would like to start again in January? Would people like to start on the 5th or the 12th?
Well, now you're starting to run into some bowl games, so.
They play them on Tuesday?
When you're in the BCS, they do.
can we work on the basis that we're going to take a couple of weeks off for Christmas, the 15th, last one before the new year, and then we can start again on the 12th?
Yeah, I think the 12th.
Because I know that for me on the 5th, it'll be the post-Christmas New Year cleanup mess that always happens, even though we're only closed for a couple of days. I can imagine that other people are going to be in a similar situation.
Yeah, and that keeps our Outlook agenda intact. So we're just dropping the 29th then, aren't we, Chris speaking? Yeah.
Basically, yeah. Basically. I mean, if you really, really want to have a phone call on the 29th, I'm sure we could facilitate it, but I think there'd be very few people involved. And I would probably be not in the best of form. Not that I'm in the best of form now, but anyway. Okay, then. I think we should just adjourn that meeting and pick it up in 2 weeks' time. David, are you running off somewhere now?
I'll be in the office probably in about 30 minutes. So I'm just working from home at the moment.
Okay, I needed to catch up with you on one thing. Okay, if people have any queries or anything else, please follow us up on the list and talk to you all again in 2 weeks. Thanks.
Thanks, McKaylee.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.